Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachas Daf Nun Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin 9 lines from the top of Daf Nun Hey. More accurate, 8 lines from the top. In the middle of the line, you notice Tonu Rabbonan. A Tanaic source follows that which you see in a frame. And before we read the Gemara itself, let's glance at the outside margin where you see the Nosei topic heading. Under that, we've written, Mosai Mafrishin, when is it that we separate in tithing, being Mafrish, Trumas, and Maisers, Mita'inim al Grogros, from figs, to cover dried figs, Ta'inim being fresh figs, Grogros being dried figs, and the other way around, Mi Grogros al Ta'inim. When will we allow separation from dry figs to cover fresh figs? It may be noted that fresh figs are considered more desirable. They're considered yofe, more desirable than dried figs. However, dried figs have an advantage in that they have a greater shelf life than fresh figs. The source begins, Tonu Rabbanan, Tormin Te'enim al Hagrogros, B'mokoim shirigilin lasos te'enim grogros. One is allowed to separate te'enim, fresh figs, to cover, to serve as a tithe on dried figs. Rashi adds b'minyon, so that if you are talking, let us say, about maisers, that means you would take off one fresh fig to cover a balance of 9 other dried figs. When is one allowed to do this? That's b'mokan shurigil nasus teim to grows. That's in a place that's customary for people to make or prepare their fresh figs and turn them into dried figs. In other words, they subject their fresh figs to the drying process. The source goes on to say, velo grogros al teinim. One is not allowed to separate, to tithe, grogros, dried figs, to serve as a tithe for fresh figs. Vafilu b'mokom shiregilin lasois te'enim grogros. Even in a place where it's customary to make the fresh figs into dry figs. So even if you're in a place that it's customary to make dry figs, one is not allowed to tithe dried figs and give them to the kohen. This source requires a great deal of explanation. The Gemara proceeds to do just that. Omar Mar, at this point, the Gemara quotes from the Resha of the source. Tormin Te'enim al Hagrogros. One is allowed to tithe fresh figs to cover the dry figs. B'mokim Shugim Lasus Te'enim Grogros. In a place that's customary to dry out the figs. The Gemara infers from this, B'mokoim shirigilin, in where it's customary to make the dried figs, then you can offer the fresh figs as tithe. B'mokoim she'ein regilin, if it's in a place that it's not customary to make dried figs, loy, then one would not be allowed to tithe fresh figs to cover dry figs. Hechidomi, what are the circumstances behind this? E de'iko kohen, if there is a kohen who receives the truma tithe in the vicinity, then mokoim she'eno rogil, if it's a place that's not customary to make dry figs. Amai lo, why is there a prohibition in tithing and offering a fresh fig to a kohen? If there's a kohen around, and it's a place that they don't customarily make or customarily dry out their figs, why should you not be allowed to give a fresh fig to the kohen as his tithe? V'hotnan, we have the following source that says, Mokoim Shiesh Kohen, where there is a kohen in the vicinity, Toreim Min Hayofet, one is expected to tithe from the fresh figs. So why in the world should there be a restriction of using a fresh fig as a tithe? Elo pshito deleko kohen. It must be that we're talking about circumstances that there is no kohen in the vicinity. Now, if there's no kohen in the vicinity, and I have to commence with a tithe, it's of course reasonable to forbid using a fresh fig as a tithe. It's going to go bad over the course of time until you chance upon a kohen. Therefore, the source teaches us that if there is no kohen in the vicinity, then one is not allowed to separate a fresh fig as his tithe. And of course, he'll have to separate the dry figs. So far, what have we established? We have established that the source is talking about a case that there's no kohen. Eino seifa. So let's bear that in mind, that the source is dealing with a situation of no kohen in the vicinity. The seifa, the latter part of the source, goes on to say, this too we have in a frame, it's a quote from the source above, V'lo grogrois al hateinim, one is not allowed to tithe dried figs to cover fresh figs, V'afilu b'mokoim sherogiu lasois te'enim grogros, even in a place where it's customary to make dry figs. V'i deleko kohen, if we're talking about a case that there is no kohen in the vicinity, amai loy, why then is there a restriction from tithing dry figs? V'hotnan, mokoim she'ein kohen, if you're dealing with a situation there's no kohen in the vicinity, Tore min hamaskayim, one is expected to tithe using as his tithe that which has a long shelf life. That's grogros. Ela pshita deiko kohen. We have to say that the circumstances of the seifa that says you're not allowed to tithe using the dried figs, it's because there is a kohen in the vicinity. And as such, we learned before, if there is a kohen in the vicinity, then you're mafresh from the yofeh, from the fresh figs. At this point, though, we have an uncomfortable situation. If you glance back a few lines, you'll notice we have a dashed underline pshita. That is the point at which we establish the circumstances of the resha. Right now, we see another dashed on the line pshita, whereby we're establishing the circumstances of the seifa. So the Gemara asserts that pshita deiko kohen. We are assuming then that the seifa is talking about a case that there is a kohen. So should we say as follows, resha deleko kohen, seifa deiko kohen, that in the same source, the first part of the source is talking about a case that there's no kohen. The second part of the source is talking about that there is a kohen. That is generally speaking, an uncomfortable situation where one source is split into two separate circumstances. The Gemara responds and says, in fact, yes, resha deleko kohen, seifa deiko kohen. That's how we have to explain the above source, that the resha was describing a case that there is no kohen, and the seifa is talking about a case that there is. Amar Rav Popo, shma mino, from this approach to dealing with the source above, we conclude dachkinon umukminon masnisen. We would rather push ourselves and establish a source betray tami as a difficult source that has a resha talking about one thing and a seifa about another. We would rather set up a source that has this discrepancy, if you will, between the resha and seifa, and say that the resha is talking about a circumstance different than that of the seifa. V'lo mukminon betray tanoi. Rather than saying that the Reisha and the Seifa are talking about the same circumstance, and as far as what would appear to be a contradiction, we would say that there are two different Tanaic opinions being reflected. So once again, we would rather set up a Tanaic source that has a certain amount of difficulty to it and explain it as talking about two separate circumstances, rather than trying to resolve the discrepancy by establishing that there is a Tanaic controversy in the source. The Mishnah. Kol ha-menachos niloishus bepoishrin. All meal offerings are kneaded with lukewarm water, umeshamron shelo yachmitzu, and one must guard it or ensure that it does not ferment. As long as the dough of a batter is being kneaded, the fermentation does not set in. Fermentation becomes a problem when the dough is left unkneaded, if you will. The im hichmitz shiorea, if a person allows the shirayim, the remainder of the meal offering, after the kometz, the handful of meal offering is separated, the balance is called the shirayim. And if one allows the shirayim to become chometz, over beloy sase, he's in violation of a negative command. In our marked Mishnah, you can see that there's a semicolon here. That is to protect one from making a mistake and assuming that the shenemar is a word attached to that which we just learned. It's pointed out, shenemar is an explanation of the reisha. The reisha said that one must, in making the mincha, must guard it from becoming chometz. Shenemar, as it says in the pasuk, a pasuk that will indicate that one must guard it from becoming chometz. Kol hamincho asher takrivu l'Hashem loy sa'aseh chometz. As far as the issue of the shirayim and one who makes the shirayim into chometz is in violation of a negative command, that's a separate discussion. The Mishnah goes on, v'chayav al lishosa v'al arichosa v'al afiyosa. One is going to be chayav, is guilty for the kneading of a chometz mincha. In other words, a mincha that was allowed to become chometz. If he goes ahead and processes it, he kneads it. V'al arichosa, and the shaping of the loaves. V'al afiyosa, and the baking in the oven. One will be chayav for each step done in a chometz fashion, in a non-dictated chametz fashion, because there are two menachas that we do process as chametz, the shtei alechem and the 10 loaves that constitute part of the lechem of the lachmei toda. But outside of those, it's forbidden to allow a mincha to become chametz. So if one does any stage in the preparation of the mincha in a chametz state, he is in violation. Mino hani mili. From where do we know that if the kohen is machmitz the shirayim, if he allows the remainder to become chometz, he's over loisase, he's in violation of a negative command. The answer, Omar Reish Lakish, Dilma Kral, the pasuk says loisoyfe chometz chelkom. From this it's derived, afilu chelkom lo soyfe chometz. Even their portion is the shirayim, do not bake as chometz. So this would be a source for the loisase in allowing the shirayim to become chometz. If one does that, so he's in violation of this pasuk. The Gemara asks a question, and at this point we start there's a long question that starts here. You can see this is indicated by the kuf that's encircled the right-hand side of the Gemara text. A vertical line descends from this and continues onto Amud Beis. All of the lines that are opposite this vertical dashed line constitute the question. We also have introduced a triangle into the markings. This is explained under our Mivneh heading on the outside margin. The triangle, you can see, is noted as a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the back and forth structure of this sukya. The triangle with the point facing up represents kushyos, questions. And when the triangle flips over, they will be responses to the question that preceded it. So the Gemara asks here, V'hai lohochi hu da'asa? Is the pasuk le'sefer chametz chelkom used for what we just said, namely the prohibition of allowing the shirayim to turn into chametz? Hai miboyale chilsanya. I need it for the following teaching. The pasuk says, and we're going to note that this is from Vayikra Perek Vov. It says loy sefer chametz. Ma Talmud Lomar. Why does the Torah have to spell that out? Valo Kvar Nemar, it says in Perek Beis, also dealing with Menachas, the Torah says, Lo Sase Chometz. Don't make it Chometz. So what do I gain by having the Pasuk in Vayikra Perek Vav that says, don't bake it as Chometz? The source answers, Lefi Shenemar Lo Sase Chometz. Since the once the pasuk says lo sasa chometz, yochol lo yehei chayav elo achas al kulon, could it be that for all the different stages of preparation, he would be chayav only one offense, one lav? Tamid lomar loy soife. Therefore, I have this other pasuk in Perek Vav that says, "Don't bake it." Bake it essentially is the act of taking the dough and putting it into the oven for baking. That's the baking stage. Afia bichlal hoisa. The Brisa points out that the act of afia baking was part of the general rule of loisase that was in Perek Beis. Lama yotzas. So why is there this additional pasuk in Perek Vav of loisafe? Why is it taken out of the general pasuk that covers all different stages, when it says lo sasa, that covers all stages, including baking? So why is baking isolated and highlighted in a separate pasuk? Answer, lahakish oleho, to compare to it. Ma afio miuchedes shihi maisi yichidi. Just like the baking is a specific stage, a specific act. And it's a specific singular act. V'chayovin oleho bifnei atzmo. And one, it would be guilty for it by itself. In other words, if someone else had kneaded the dough and shaped the loaves, and I come along and put the shaped loaf into the oven. So one is chayev for that on its own, by itself. So just like afia is a specific stage in the preparation, and one will be guilty for that alone, Af ani avi lishas avirchas avachomaisi yichidi sheba. So too, I will include, add to the list of individual acts the kneading, the shaping of the loaf, and any other maisi yichidi lasuye kituf, to include the action of kituf, which has to do with a loaf before it's put into the oven. One smooths down the exterior of it with water. Shehu Maisi Yechidi, I'm going to include anything that has this characteristic of afia, that it's considered an individual action, an individual stage. V'chayovin oleo b'fnei atzmo, just like for afia, one is chayav on its own, so too for any of these other listed acts, any one of them would generate a violation. So at this point, we come to the end of the long question. We opened up this section of Gemara as citing Lo Sefer Chometz Chelkom as a source for the Isser of allowing the Shirayim, the balance of the meal offering that is given to the Kohanim. One is in violation of Lo Sefer Chometz if he allows the Shirayim to become Chometz. On that, the Gemara had asked, but this Pasuk of Lo Sefer Chometz is used for this teaching, the idea that one is Chayev for individual acts of a mincha that is made into chametz. The Gemara answers, Anan me chelkom koaminon. we learn the restriction regarding the shirayim being made into chametz from the word chelkom. The pasuk says lo yisoyfe chelkom. Chelkom means their portion, the portion given to the kohanim, namely the shirayim. So from the word chelkom, we derive the halacha regarding the shirayim and its prohibition of turning into chametz. The Gemara asks, and notice, of course, the triangles as you go along the Gemara. You'll notice quite a few of them changing position as you go along. So here we come to a new question. The Ema Kule Lahochi Hudasa, maybe the whole pasuk of Lo Yisefe Chelkom Chometz is for this purpose alone, for the Isser of Chimutz Shirayim. And as far as individual acts done in a state of Chimutz, that I would not know. So the Gemara answers, Im Kain Lichtoiv, if the purpose of this pasuk was to tell me only about the Shirayim, it would have said as follows, Chelkom, Lo Seifel Chometz, their portion, the portion given to the Kohanim, the Shirayim, don't bake it as Chometz. My, what are we to make of what the pasuk actually says? Lo Seifel Chometz, Chelkom. Since the pasuk doesn't open up with Shirayim, it opens up rather with prohibition of Lo Seifel Chometz, Shamis mina tarti. We derive both points from this pasuk. One is the chiyuv on a maisi yechidi for one act done in a state of chometz of a mincha. That is enough to generate a guilt. And number two, we also learn from this the isser of chimutz shirayim. Question: the ema afia deporat borachmona lechayev chada. Maybe the way to view this prohibition is as follows, that for the act of baking that the Torah specified, that has its own chiyuv, its own violation. Enoch, the other actions, l'chayev chado akulu, as far as the other actions, like the shaping of the loaf, the smoothing down of the exterior of it, the kneading of it, if one were to do all of those stages, he wouldn't be chayev more than one offense. In other words, all the rest of the stages in the preparation would be lumped into one singular offense. The Gemara answers, Mishum dehave dovar shoye bechlal, since the example of afia is something that was part of a rule, was part of a general rule we mentioned before of lo yisase chometz, and it was part of a general prohibition of making preparing menachas in a state of chometz. The yotza min haklal, however, a separate pasuk of afia was stated separately. Lelamed, and it's being stated separately, as we saw above, comes to teach. Lo lelamed al atzmus. It's not here to teach me only about itself, to tell me that there's an avera for baking the mincha as chometz. El lelamed al haklal kulo yotza. Rather, it's coming to teach me concerning all of the rest of the stages concerning the chometz, the mincha prepared as chometz, and for our purposes, we're just restating what we saw above. Just like afia is a individual stage of preparation and it generates a chiyuv on its own, so too for any other individual stage of preparation, there will be a violation if it's done, of course, as chometz. Question, the Ema, why not read the Pasuk in Perek Beis as follows? Lo Yisase, that's the Pasuk from Perek Beis, equals Klal. That's a general statement. Don't make, and not specifying what act, but a general statement, don't prepare a Mincha as Chometz. And then, Lo Yisofe, the Pasuk in Perek Vav, equals Prat. That's a specific act. And when Darshanim Psukim of the Torah, we have different rules. Then one of the rules is called klal uprat, and that's a situation where we have one pasuk in a general fashion, a general form, and the continuation in a specific form. Klal uprat ein bechlal elamashe beprat. The rule says that when you have general and then specific, the only thing that is covered by those psukim is that which was specified. That's Ein bichlal, there's nothing left in the general category, elo mashe beprat, only that which was specified. And in this case, it would be afia in midi achrina lo. that only for baking the mincha as chametz would there be a violation. But for any of the other acts done to a mincha while in a state of chimutz, there would be no problem. In other words, so why not say that that's what the Torah is telling us here, that we have a klal uprat, and as a result of that, only for baking in a state of chimutz would there be a problem. Omar Rabbi Avturiki. Rabbi Avturiki responds and says why we don't say that we have a klal uprat situation here. Mishum v'have klal uprat hamruchokim zemizeh. The klal was in Perek Beis. The prat was in Perek Vav. From the second perek to the sixth perek, there's quite a gap between the two psukim. That's called a klal uprat hamruchokim zemizeh, that are distant from one another. The chol klal uprat hamruchokim zemizeh ein donin oison b'chal uprat. We don't approach the psukim when they are spread apart from each other as these are. We don't deal with them. We don't derive them in the klal uprat fashion. And therefore, since we don't do the klal uprat approach to these psukim, we are not limited to afia alone as an example of a violation. At this point, we have a long question. Noting the kuf to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical dashed line that descends from the kuf, indicating all of this is part of the question. The gist of the question is: we seem to have evidence elsewhere that we do darshan klal uprat hamru chokin. The example that will be cited by the Gemara has to do with the what we've noted on the is our no say over here is the mokom shchita of a korban chatas. In the Beis Hamikdash, we know that korban ola was to be slaughtered in the northern part of the courtyard. Other types of sacrifices, for example, a korban shlomim, that could be slaughtered in any part, including the southern half of the Azara. What about a korban chatas? So the place of shchita for korban chatas will be the subject of the discussion that follows. As a result of this discussion, we're going to come out with a feeling that we would, if we could, we would darshan a psukim, even if they're spread apart from one another, in a klal uprat fashion. After the long question ends, the Gemara then has a response to it. The response begins with the word maskif. At that point in the Gemara, it will be said that our whole approach to the psukim concerning the chatos as klal uprat is not, it's not that at all. It doesn't even get off the ground, because in fact we have a prat uklal set up, which is totally different from what we are discussing now. That's a case where we have a specific point mentioned, which is followed by a general point. That already is a different story, and hence the question that we thought we had, whereby we thought we had a basis of darshaning klal uprat hamruchokim, that whole basis, let's say, is ripped out from under our feet, and hence the question falls away. Let's now start the long question. Mosiv Rav Ado Bar Avo V'Amri Lo, another version instead of Rav Ado is Kedi, no, without any names. The word Kedi indicates a nameless question. Uklal uprat hamruchokim zemizeh ein donin uison bechlal uprat. Is it so, like you just said, that when you have the klal and prat, psukim, the general and the specific, separated from one another, then we don't subject this to the drosha of a klal uprat, v'hotanya, but we have the following source. V'shochat oisoi b'mokoim asher yishchat es ho'oila. This posuk is by the Soir Nosi. It's a sin offering brought by the king. It says that it shall be slaughtered in the place that one slaughters a korban ola. Heichon oila nishchetes, where is the korban ola slaughtered? Batzafon, in the northern half of the azara. Af zeh, batzafon, so too the chatos is slaughtered in the northern half of the azara. The Brisa asks, v'chi anu mikan lemedim? Are we really learning from here the idea that a chatos is slaughtered in the tzafon? Halo kvar ne'amar, we have another pasuk that says, b'mokom asher tishchat ho'ila, tishchat hachatos. That where you slaughter an ola, you shall slaughter a chatos. And we know that an ola is done in the northern part of the Azor. There's a separate pasuk for ola that tells us the ola is done in the north. So, and it says in this pasuk that the chatos is slaughtered where the ola is. Ha lama ze yotza. So what do I need the pasuk of v'shochat oso for, this seeming repetition? The kovo. It in fact is a repetition, and it's here for the purpose of telling me that the north is binding. That if you slaughter the chatos in another part of the Azara, the southern part, one will have ruined the sacrifice. So that's what Likovo means, that there's a repetition in the psukim, and when psukim repeat themselves, they are doing so to tell me that it's ma'akev, it's binding. Shi'im loy shachar oisoy betzafon, poslo. If you don't slaughter the chatos in the north, you will thereby have ruined it. Ata oimer lekach yotzos. Are you saying that the posuk by the Sori Nosi is stated for that purpose, to tell me that it's binding? O eino ela shezeh tolun safon ve'ein achir tolun safon. Maybe the role of v'shachat oisoi is to tell me simply that the chatos alone requires safon, and another chatos of the Sawyer Nasi, the king's Sawyer, requires Safon. V'ein acher ta'on Safon. But other chatos korbanos, like the Si'irei Horegolim, those are goat offerings that are brought on holidays, they don't need Safon. Maybe that's the purpose of the pasuk of V'shachat Oysoi, the Mokoim from Perek Dalet. Talmud Lomar, therefore, we have the following, a third pasuk, that says v'shachar es hachatos b'mokoyim ho'oila ze bono av l'chol chatois shetu'unos tzafon. If you were to think that the posuk of Perek Dalet by the Sawyer Nosi is telling me that only the Sawyer Nosi requires tzafon, perish the thought. We have this other posuk, a third posuk, that tells me all chatos require the north. The Gemara now goes on to point out, Taimo de Kosov Rachmona v'shochat es hachatos. The only reason that I know that all chatos require tzafon is I have a third posuk. Ha la pochi, had I not had this last third posuk, have amino, I would have thought, shezeh ta'un tzafon, v'ein achir ta'un tzafon. I would have thought that the Sawyer Nasi alone requires Safon, to the exclusion of the Se'irei Haregolim, and that's what's meant, the Ein Achir Tol Safon, that only the Sawyer Nasi, and not all Chatos. Now, why would I have thought that? My Taimo? Why would I have thought that only the Sawyer Nasi requires Safon, and other Chatos don't? Lav Mishum, Dehave Klal Uprat. Is it not because we have a general and then a specific? The afagav demeru chokim ze mizeh. Even though the posuk of v'shochad oso is in Perek Dalet, and the other posuk of b'mokoim asher is in Perek Vav. So that even though these two psukim are separate from one another, we nevertheless would have darshened them as a klal uprat, and have limited the requirement of tzafon to the Sawyer Nasi, and not to include all chatos. Let's read that last phrase again. The afagav de meruchokim zemizeh donin oison the klal uprat. We would have darshened them as a klal uprat, thereby limiting the din of tzafon to the Sawyer Nasi. This is the end of the long question. So just to put things in perspective, just before this long question, we had rejected the idea by the preparation of a korban in a state of chometz, we rejected the idea that the prohibition is limited to afiyah. Why would I have thought that it might be limited to afiyah? Because of a klal uprat. However, we pointed out above that they were a klal uprat hamruchokim, and therefore we don't darshan them, we don't expound them as a klal uprat. Therefore, I'm not limited to afiyah. Then the Gemara challenged, what do you mean we don't darshan klal uprat hamruchokim? Here we seem to, yes, we would have darshaned the klal uprat hamruchokim. The Gemara now responds. Maskif lo Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi responds to the attempt to question what we said above from the using the case of the shchitas sofon of the chatos. He says as follows, Hai klal uprat hu. Would the case of the Sawyer Nasi and the other more general Pusuk have represented this structure of Klal Uprat, whereby general is followed by specific? That is just not true. If you look carefully at the Psukim and where they're located, you will find they are just the opposite. Prat Uklal Hu. The Sawyer Nasi is a specific type of Chatos. That is in Perek Dalet. The other pasuk, the second pasuk, was from Perek Vav. That is just the opposite. That's a case that you have the specific mentioned first, and then the general. That's prat uklalu v'nase klal moisif al haprat. In such a setup of psukim, there's another rule that kicks in, and it says that when you have specific and then general, we come to include everything. Visrabi luhu kol mili. We, technically speaking, should have included all chatos as requiring tzafon. And if that be the case, so why in the world was there any need for a third pasuk to make a point that would have been fairly obvious from the structure or the setup, the ordering of the first two psukim, whereby we first had a prat, the sor nosi requiring tzafon, and then we had a klal b'mokom asher tishchad tishchad chatos. That was a klal, and then you have a prat uklal, and I would thereby understand all chatos require tzafon. So the question now is, why did the Tana have to bring in a third pasuk to begin with? The Gemara, so to this, we explain, elatana oisui ko kashile. The Tana was bothered by the use of the word oisui, which is a very specific kind of word. It's a word of specification, meaning you shall slaughter it. Vehochi ko'omar, and thusly, we are to understand the Tana above, o eno elo sheze to'un safon, maybe only the Sur Nosi requires tzafon, the Ein Achir Ta'un tzafon, and no other chatos, and will be, for example, the Seire Horegolim, they may not require, maybe they don't require tzafon. And why would you think that? Why would you think that tzafon is limited to the Sur Nosi? Because of Rachmona Oisoi. So that even though maybe we do have a prat uklal setup, but nevertheless, there's still room to ask this question. Maybe the din of tzafon is limited to the sorer nasi, to the exclusion of other kinds of chatos. Therefore, to undo the suggestion of the word tzafon, we need a third pasuk. But at no point in time, and this is what we have to emphasize, at no point in time was there any reference to the use of a klal uprat ha-meruchokim. And with that, we can understand then that what Rav Avturiki answered before, that klal uprat hamruchokim, we do not darshan. And that from the whole story of the tzafon by the chatos, there never was a suggestion that we might have darshan a klal uprat hamruchokim. V'hashto denafgole mivashochet es achatos. Now that I learned that all chatos required tzafon from the posik of v'shochet es achatos, in other words, the final posik that was brought in shows us that tzafon is characteristic of all chatos, oisoi vimutei mai. What does the word oso in the case of the sorinasi come to exclude? Once you tell me that all chatos require tzafon, so why do you have to tell me you shall slaughter it in the tzafon? What, so the Gemara is asking, oso limute mai, what is being excluded by the use of the word oso? When you say it requires tzafon, you're suggesting something else does not. Well, what does not? Answer, limute as follows. It comes to exclude oisoi b'tzafon, v'ein soyer nachshon b'tzafon. There was another kind of unusual korban chatas. It was a korban chatas that was not brought because of a sin. This was at the time that the Mishkan was dedicated. The tribal leaders, all 12 of them, brought a korban chatas. It was called, it was a goat offering that was brought as a korban chatas. The term Nachshon, or the name Nachshon, is cited because he was the first. Nachshon ben Aminadav was the tribe. The head of the tribe of Yehuda, he was the first one of the Nasim to bring the Sawyer, and hence all of the Sawyer, the goat offerings of the tribal leaders are included under the term Sawyer Nachshon. So the pasuk of Veshochat Oso by the Sawyer Nasi, when a king sins, his korban requires shechita in the north, his korban to the exclusion of these korbanos, the se'irim brought by the heads of the shvatim. Now, why do I have to exclude the Sawyer Nachshon from requiring tzafon? Salkadai techamina, I might have thought, hoyol v'israbi le'inyan smicha, l'israbi nami le'inyan tzafon. Since the Sawyer Nachshon was included for another act that's characteristic of these korbanos, namely the smicha act, that's the act of placing one's hands on the head of the sacrifice and pressing down with one's weight on the head of the animal. So this act of smicha, we find, is necessary with the regard to the Sawyer Nachshon. L'srabi nami linyan safon, I might have thought that the Sawyer Nachshon will be included also with regard to the requirement of the north. Komash malon, therefore, I have the word oisoi to exclude the Sawyer Nachshon from the north. The Gemara asks, Usmicha gufa menolon, from where do I know that smicha is necessary by the Sawyer Nachshon? The Sanyo, so we have the following Tanaic source, in which Shitas Rabbi Yehuda will be of significance to us. He's the first one of two names cited in this source. The pasuk says, "V'somach yodoi al roish ha-so'ir." This is by the Sawyer, by the Chatos Nasi. L'rabois Sawyer Nachshon l'smicha. So this pasuk of Asomach Yoda Rosh HaSoir comes to include the Sawyer Nachshon as requiring smicha as well. And at this point then we can say, since we see we include the Sawyer Nachshon for smicha, there was room to think that I would include the Sawyer Nachshon also for the north requirement. And therefore, I need the pasuk that said oisoi to exclude the Sawyer Nachshon from the north requirement. Rabbi Shimon Omer, he has a different approach. He says, L'rabois sire avodis kechovim l'smicha. The pasuk v'somach yodo is coming to include the special sin offering on the occasion that the public is in violation as a result of an erroneous legal ruling. They violate idolatry. So when that pasuk called the Si'ire Avodis Chovim is brought, it needs to have smicha done to it. And that's what Rabbi Shimon learns from this pasuk. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.